Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
It's an understatement to say there are a lot of urgent concerns in the news. Today's top stories come to mind. We're going to continue to look at the questions raised by this weekend's mass shootings. But today we also want to focus on another urgent matter, climate change.
This is kind of the new normal.
Which is more intense storms.
Expect intense tropical cyclones to become more frequent.
This is a global problem.
And temperatures have dried out Sao Paulo's Cantareira Reservoir.
Cape Town is running out of water.
The 16th consecutive month of record-breaking heat.
Record all-time high temperatures being broken over and over again.
Oh, and did we mention July 2019 was the hottest month on record? Starting today, we're ratcheting up our climate change coverage, a climate change reboot, if you will. The Guardian and Telemundo recently announced they're switching from the phrase climate change to climate emergency. The Guardian will now call climate skeptics climate science deniers. And six newsrooms in Florida have put aside the competitive get-it-first spirit that's in their DNA to team up for a new collaboration to report on climate change, sharing resources to cover it. The Palm Beach Post, the South Florida Sun-Sentinel, the Tampa Bay Times, the Orlando Sentinel, the Miami Herald, and WLRN Public Media all will be part of the Florida Reporting Network. Mark Katchis is executive editor at the Tampa Bay Times. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
And Alex Harris is actually, I think, the only climate change beat reporter in this new group. She's at the Miami Herald. Alex, welcome to you as well.
Hi, thanks for having us.
And Mark at the Tampa Bay Times, you know there's a history here, decades of the press dealing with covering climate change and a real wrestling match in some newsrooms. People felt you always had to have a voice from the other side. That changed. But the Columbia Journalism Review, when the big UN devastating report on climate change came out in April, they bashed the press. The media are complacent while the world burns.
Well, definitely by combining efforts, we're able to raise the conversation, no doubt about it. The fact is, this is ground zero for the impacts of climate change in the state, in the country, in the world. Mm. Florida is being hit to a point where the sea level has risen 3 inches in the last 10 years. Most of this state is going to be reckoning with the impacts of climate change in the foreseeable future. We see this as the most pressing and biggest issue of our lives and of our children's lives. And we want to bring rigor and collaboration to how we cover it here in the state.
And Alex, again, the climate change beat reporter for the Miami Herald, just give us a couple of examples of how people in Miami are really conscious of climate change.
Absolutely. So yeah, when most people think about climate change, they think about, you know, a polar bear on a shrinking ice floe. But in South Florida and Miami particularly, it looks more like, you know, roads flooded so you can't get to work that rust the bottom of your car. It's the change in property values of inland higher elevation buildings and how that can ripple out to your insurance costs. It really touches every facet of our lives down here. And it's something that we have a unique political atmosphere down here as well, is that everyone kind of agrees this is happening and we're already on the next part of the debate, which is what do we do about it?
And how is it being received? Do people question whether or not you, Alex, are doing journalism or being an advocate? Because while you have people like the Columbia Journalism Review editor saying, you can't say that covering the effects of climate change is advocacy anymore, this should be completely nonpartisan. But then on Fox News, just one example, the story with Martha McCallum. She had the guest Jesse Waters, who said, this is crazy. The planet renews itself. I'm doubtful that man is causing the warming because experts have been saying this for years. They said there was going to be a Y2K meltdown that didn't happen. They said there was Russian collusion that didn't happen. Do you get readers saying you're being an activist?
Yes, I get the occasional email or mostly Twitter reply from people who think that my coverage is not based in scientific facts. It's liberal. And I would say I get a lot more of that from, you know, national readers. From the local level, yes, I do get a couple of those emails. But generally, people aren't really concerned about fighting the science. They know it's real. They know their streets are flooding. And they're more interested in how much of their taxes are going to pay to install a flood pump at the end of their street. It's really all about solutions and focused on things that are actually happening in real life.
And Mark Katchis, again, the editor over at the Tampa Bay Times, but part of this new collaboration, the Florida Climate Reporting Network. We understand that you're hearing actually from people outside Florida who want to be a part of it.
Well, actually, you had said that there are six partners involved in this, mm-hmm. and that was exactly right when we founded this. We're up to 17.
Oh.
We have partners from around the country. Most are in Florida, but we just added Inside Climate News. Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting has joined our network, but mostly it is newsrooms inside the state. We're also hearing from people, honestly, who want to give money to us to cover this issue. Individual donors who are really excited about the fact that we're bringing attention to this huge issue. And just to explain a little bit about how this works. So right now, it's mostly a content sharing relationship where all the partners are sort of required as being partners in this group to contribute stories that everybody else can run. So if the Tampa Bay Times writes two stories and the Miami Herald does two stories and South Florida Sun Sentinel does two stories a month on this topic, and Alex is actually writing more because she's a beat reporter covering this, we all contribute to this quote-unquote bank of stories that we can draw from. But yes, we're hearing from partners all over. We've broadened the tent to include ethnic media. We have a public radio station involved in the partnership. We're looking for other partnerships as well to add to this because we're very pragmatic about how we can serve our readers the best way. We know we can't all do this by ourselves anymore.
What do you do about tone? I'm reading that Matthew Nisbett, who's a communications professor at Northeastern, wrote an article headlined, "The Trouble with Climate Emergency Journalism." This was in the journal Issues in Science and Technology. You know, fever pitch coverage could make climate change just go the way of dietary science, you know, like bad diets, good diets. If they haven't got anything positive to hold on to, they may not want to hear it. David Wallace Wells is the opposite. We just had him on recently. Terrific new book, Uninhabitable Earth, Life After Warming. He goes full bore with what he thinks is necessary. For instance, when that UN report came out, his headline was, UN says climate genocide is coming. It's actually worse than that. He feels you just have to really underscore what a crisis this is. But then, you know, people say if you don't give people tools to do something, you lose them as readers. What do you think, Mark, about tone?
Well, I believe, and I've always subscribed to the belief that you show people, you don't tell them. And we're focusing on showing people the impacts. The fact is if we can show people how climate change is impacting them in their community, then it becomes a lot more real and a lot more meaningful. So I understand the issue of tone. I think if you're as neutral as possible, but just lay the facts out there, we are not legislating in any way. We're not a legislative body here. We're 17 members that are sharing content. Every one of us has our own policies and our own best practices and guidelines that we use. I know in our newsroom, and I'm pretty sure in Alex's newsroom, we're focused on just laying the facts out there.
Yeah. And what do you do locally there in Florida about the politics of this? You had a candidate for governor, Andrew Gillum, who said that it was going to be his number one priority. Ron DeSantis, who actually won, the Republican, was a bit of a denier. But as the Sun Sentinel writes in an editorial, there's been a sea change in Florida. In April, DeSantis appointed the state's first chief science officer to find science-based solutions to environmental problems like the algae and red tide outbreaks. He's looking for a chief resilience officer to prepare the state for climate change, especially a sea level rise. They're calling this a watershed moment, like in The Wizard of Oz, when the movie turns from black and white to color. With one exception, House Speaker Jose Oliva, Florida's Republican lawmakers, no longer deny climate change. So how do you think your consortium might impact your state policies?
So actually, we found it kind of interesting what we've seen this so far from funding from Tallahassee. Yes, we have some activists like to call the years of Governor Rick Scott, who's now our state senator, a lost decade in terms of policy moving forward on climate change. Governor DeSantis has moved us a little bit forward in some of his blue-green algae and red tide executive actions and some of his Everglades funding initiatives. But I wrote a couple weeks ago actually about how he funded a program that Governor Rick Scott created to help coastal communities around Florida plan for climate change. He upped that budget. It's still about only about $5.5 million, which when you think about the city of Miami Beach spending $600 million to raise its roads and install flood pumps, it's not that much. And activists that I talk to and people that I talk to, legislators in Tallahassee, talk a lot about they have a lot more optimism for this upcoming session and maybe having some bills passed and seeing some movement forward from the state level on, you know, agreeing that sea level rise is happening and affecting coastal communities, and it's going to be an expensive thing to fix, so they need to start coming up with money for it.
Yeah. Alex, one last question. I asked you if you were getting critics. You are. But have you talked to Floridians, people maybe reading of this new collaboration, who are kind of saying, you know what, thank you for this because I've changed my mind?
Oh, people are thrilled. You know, they don't necessarily write in to tell me, oh my gosh, I've been evangelized. I totally believe the climate science now. But it's something that I think people are starting to pay more attention to in fields that they, you know, didn't think climate was a part of before. The IPCC report is one thing, but hearing here's how it's specifically going to affect my community, my wallet, my house, that's, I think, maybe more important than whatever you call it, is showing people exactly what's going to happen and how they should prepare and what they should know.
That's Alex Harris, a climate change reporter at the Miami Herald. We've also been speaking with Mark Ketches, who's executive editor at the Tampa Bay Times, both part of a new collaboration, the Florida Climate Reporting Network. Mark, Alex, thank you both so much.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Robin.
And by the way, Alex mentioned the IPCC, that's the devastating Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report, which didn't seem to make a dent. So we're also launching a climate change coverage reset, I guess you could call it. More coverage, more urgency. Let us know what you want to hear.